One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Welcome to Lore of the Land. Before we get started on today's episode, I just wanted to say a few words. You will 100% notice something different in that Stacia's not with me at this moment in time because she's on holiday. And also, when I recorded this episode, it was actually before lockdown, so all the way back in February. And I travelled down to Ipswich and Stacia wasn't available then either. So I had a chat with... Well, no, I won't spoil that for you. I'll wait until the episode gets going. And then you'll find out who I spoke to. But I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's not too weird without Stacia. And the other thing is, our theme for this season is meant to be body parts. But because Stacia and I are absolutely terrible at sticking to rules of any kind, even ones that we've made ourselves, this episode doesn't relate to body parts at all. And if you can hear scuttling around in the background now, that's my house rabbit exploring. Typically, at least she's not chewing cardboard right now. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. It's a really interesting chat, and things will be back to normal with me and Stacia in our next episode. Bye! So, welcome to Lore of the Land. You may notice that I'm flying solo today, but obviously I'm not completely alone because that would be weird and probably quite boring for everybody. Today I'm joined by what I would say an unsung hero of the weird world. He's probably blushing a bit.
No, I am very, very embarrassed.
Darren Mann. So Darren, welcome to Lore of the Land. Thank you so much for coming along to a chat. It actually means a lot to me because I use your website an awful lot.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm sure the majority of our listeners would have come across your website at least once on their research travels.
Possibly, yes.
So for those who may not have come across it, can you tell us what you do and what your website is?
Well, the... I suppose it would help with a bit of background.
Yeah, how I
got there. And basically, way back in the 1990s, I was studying a degree in photography. And I kind of got caught up in the whole UFO movement. So my final major project was trying to reproduce famous UFO photos.
Oh, wow.
Using methods which I thought would have been used to create mm-hmm. them. So typical flying hubcaps,
yeah.
Sandwich negatives together, because back in those days Photoshop was a fantasy really,
yeah.
for want of a better description. And after that, I became a bit jaded with ufology,
yeah.
in general.
I know,
but
that feeling.
No, but because once you break it down, all the photographs could be easily reproduced.
Yeah.
And so, but I still had that paranormal bug. So once I finished my degree, I still wanted to be actively involved in photography.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back to Ipswich. I was studying at Preston at the time. And I was looking for something else to do. And I thought, well, I could actually start photographing haunted houses, haunted buildings,
mm-hmm.
haunted sites around Suffolk. And so I started to go to library, go through old newspapers, start to harvest stories, and I thought, it's a bit of a waste just sitting on these, because I'd collected about 300-400
oh, wow.
at the time. So I threw them on a website,
yeah.
which was originally called Paranormal Photos,
mm-hmm.
No, I tried to buy paranormalphotos.com, but it had gone.
It is.
And somehow I ended up buying the domain Paranormal Database. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, it's kind of what I am doing.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, people started emailing me their stories.
Okay.
And so it built, like I say, originally it was on Suffolk alone, and then it kind of spanned into Essex and then Norfolk, mm-hmm. and then it just kind of grew out. And before I knew it, I had several thousand
stories. Honestly, it is amazing. It's basically like the online oracle, the online version of is it Myths, Folklore and Legends by the Reader's Digest?
Yeah, no,
I would compare your website to an online version of that.
No, that's very kind.
I know in the paranormal kind of community how valuable it is as a resource. I was at a talk about paranormal investigations on the Sunday just gone, actually. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they were like, said, you have to go and look at this website.
Did they?
It's like, it's brilliant. You know, so people really do value it. Did you ever think it would become so popular?
No, I'm still surprised it is at times. But because, once again, way back in the beginning, when I was doing online research, I did find it very frustrating that the only stories I could find were like 4,000 or 5,000 word stories. And there's no, like, I'm loath to use the word directory because I don't really see the database as a directory, but short stories, you know, which you could then use as a leap.
Yeah, and that's how I use it, like, because it's in nice, like, kind of little, also, I guess, like, bite-sized chunks. It's a really, really good starting point. I mean, obviously, sometimes they're just, you know, one-off witness accounts, and there's nothing.
You're absolutely right.
And then I'll be like, oh, disappointing. Even Stacia, who is amazing with words, can't turn like one line into 300 words. And I've seen her do some magic before, but that's too much. But it is really interesting as someone who uses it, you know, to start digging on these places and see, you know, if there's anything else in the area. One of my questions was, have you noticed any kind of trends over time? Because obviously you've been collecting for such a long time.
Yeah.
Like if it's like seasonal or related to TV shows, or if there's like any changes in the sorts of reports
that you get. That is a really good question. And I personally, the amount of stories sent definitely ebbs and flows. But there's no real, or nothing that I can pick up on. So let's take this year, for example. Most of January, you know, I received 3 or 4 stories, and then towards the end of January, I received about 25 over the space of 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's something on TV or, you know, there's just like this collective consciousness of boredom, you know, coming down from Christmas, you know, and people just being online more. In terms of types of stories, I think that things seen on the road, I've received more stories about road ghosts recently than I have previously, and things which are more traditional, like pub ghosts, you know, I received a lot at the beginning, but a lot less now, a lot fewer stories.
That's really interesting, because obviously this is the Lore of the Land podcast, but the other element that I do is Weird Norfolk, and as part of that I've created a Google map, really basic. But something I've actually noticed is that a lot of the stories, whether it's ghosts or like ABCs or UFOs, are situated along roads. And so you will see like this pattern of like little stories like following the roads, and it's obviously just because people are travelling them so much more and, you know, seeing things as they go. But I think that's quite an interesting pattern.
And have you found like any kind of pattern relating to like the coast?
They kind of go along the roads and then round the edge of the coast, and then you get these big patches where there doesn't seem to be anything weird at all.
I've pretty much observed the same, and sometimes I do find it frustrating because I do like to go out with my camera and photograph areas, and you come across these fantastic places and you think, oh, has to be some kind of folklore or ghost sighting or something strange here. And there isn't.
There's nothing.
So,
like,
you know, I'm sitting on
this
stack of photos, which I think, you know, they're okay.
Yeah.
But there's nothing for me to do with them.
I noticed, well, actually, no, I think I'm going to ask this question first. Do you publish everything you're sent?
No.
Because I did wonder, because I didn't. Sometimes people like have really long stories, don't they? I don't know if you.
No, they do. So that's a bit hard for. If I had to estimate, I'd say about 25% of the database is made up from stories people have sent me,
mm-hmm.
and probably around between a quarter and a half of stories I'm sent, I do not publish.
Why don't you publish them?
Because some people just want advice,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm a bit cynical,
mm-hmm.
I have to admit, or not necessarily cynical, but I like to keep an open mind,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, not so open that my brains fall out,
yeah.
says the old saying goes. So if somebody comes to me and says that I think my house is haunted and this is happening, should I get a Ghostbuster in? You know, it's like, well, you need to weigh things up, you know, talk to your friends, talk to your family, you know, it's good to talk, is it a new build, you know, have you got a carbon monoxide sensor, because, you know.
Yeah, these
carbon,
are all things you need to take
absolutely.
Into account, don't you?
And then if they are adamant something is going on, then I'll refer them to a reputable body, you know, like a Society of Psychical Research or the Ghost Club, you know, and not Joe Smith down the road who recharges £50 for a smudging or whatever.
Yeah.
And other stories I receive are either too fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's been a major incident which is still in people's living memory, and I think it's not really tactful. Absolutely. Or that, you know, there's just haunted schools.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to publish a story that says X school is the toilets are haunted, because probably it's an urban myth,
mm-hmm.
let's be perfectly honest, and it's not going to do anybody any.
I know we do treat the Weird Norfolk in the same way,
mm-hmm.
obviously, because we have a platform, a paper to put it out on. I dig around in the archives a lot. I'm dusty quite often.
Oh, fantastic.
And some of the stories we come across are just absolutely fantastic, but we can't use them because they're houses that people still live in. And obviously it's that our responsibility not to freak those people out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's quite an interesting one. So even if you don't publish them, or do you keep everything though? So have you got like an extra database?
No, you've got it spot on. So everything I do is kept on a local database.
Mm-hmm.
And then every month, every other month, when it comes to updating the site,
mm-hmm.
then I'll run a query which excludes anything which I've marked not for publication.
Okay.
And so the back-end database has got other details.
Yeah.
And so if somebody asks me, and it does happen, you know, people say, oh, I've just moved into this house.
Awesome.
You've said on your website that there's a house along this street which is haunted. Can you give me any more information?
That's really interesting.
I've been known to marry people up, you know, people who used to live at a property and reported it, something strange happening, and new owners who want to know a bit more about the history.
Do you ever get any comeback for that? Do they ever
tell
you how those contacts meant or anything?
That's not necessarily what I'm there for, you know, as long as I've done something and I haven't upset anybody, then all parties consent to each other being contacted, so that's okay. That's all I need.
I get the sense that kind of like me, you're a little bit sceptical.
Yeah, no,
So is that your like official stance?
So that, I have to admit, so in the beginning, so going back when I started database, I really wanted to believe,
mm-hmm.
you know, as cliched as it is. And I still like to think there is something, but the more I read and, you know, I've become a bit more sceptical,
mm-hmm.
I suppose, for want of a better word. And I try to place things now more in a folklore perspective.
Yeah.
So, you know, that ghosts were created to keep people away from smugglers, yeah. you know, and, you know, to warn people of dangerous country roads,
yeah.
or, you know, keep off my lands kind of deal. Yeah. But, it's, you know, I've a couple of strange experiences which I can't readily explain, but I'm sure there's a scientific, strict psychological yeah. reason why.
But it doesn't make your experience any less valid.
No, like, no, yeah, 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 but
it is really important to kind of just remember people have, they do experience things that they can't explain.
No, and spot on, and yeah. that's why I think people want to share
yeah.
their experience, so they can look for some rationale behind it.
I think it's interesting that you're kind of like looking at the folklore element of it as well, because personally I feel that these modern day, I say modern, Victorian-y onwards, like ghost stories actually will become the folklore of the future. So, you know, 200 years time, this will be the folklore. So it's really important that we kind of record it.
And you're spot on, you know, and I'm sure self the, you know, and imagine, I don't know, Dave, you know, running into a pub 200 years ago saying, guys, you're not going to believe what I just encountered, you know, and now for us that's just a long forgotten ghost story,
yeah.
you know, there's just traces of it,
yeah.
of it left.
I say, I love it when you find something as well that no one else has published, and you're like, yes, I've like found, like my favourite one has been the Fanes, like in which they're Heatherset, which mm-hmm. are kind of like a black shook kind of creature, and I found one tiny little reference. Got very excited about it. And then last week, a guy messaged me to say he and someone else have both experienced the Fanes in Hemisphere.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And like he didn't know what they were called or anything, so now we can like put a name to them. It was brilliant. Very exciting.
Oh, that's
really
cool.
I was going to say, have you had it?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
The experiences that you can't explain. But you kind of have said, but I don't know if you want
to
share.
I'll be happy to share. So, and this one, a long time ago, so I was probably aged about 16, 17, and me and a friend tried to gate crash a party and completely failed. So we were walking out of a sports hall, and we were walking across the field, which was slightly misty evening. And for some reason, I felt this urge to look behind me. And I did, and there was this tall column of mist that was about 8-9 foot tall, 3-4 feet wide. And I turned and said, "Don't look behind us, let's just walk really quickly." And my friend said, "Oh, why?" And looked and screamed and swore and then took off really fast. Yeah. So I did the same. And, you know, got around the corner out of the field, and we, you know, described what we saw to each other. And it was this strange column of mist.
And you both saw the same thing.
And we both saw the same thing. And so, rationally, you know, I can only think that, like I say, it was slightly misty anyway. And mist does pretty strange things. And, you know, it's a sports centre, so various lights on, so the light must have just caught the mist at a certain spot, you know, and completely freaked out. And it's one of the frustrating things, you know. So now, if that happens, so I always keep a camera to hand.
Yeah.
So I would turn, and I like to think I would photograph it.
Well, we've talked about this before, like, because obviously everybody has some kind of camera with them, but nobody's like capturing these images, like.
No, not
and
decent ones.
I think
ones.
It's because everybody's just like, oh my God. Like, and you just freeze, don't you? And I guess that's just what's happening. It's like, damn it. It's like also, like I work with photographers and the amount of pictures that they've taken and they haven't like managed to capture anything. But hopefully you will. Hopefully because you're like
one,
in this
one
world,
day.
You'll be like, yes, this is my moment.
Oh. And I suppose the other one, if we have time.
Oh, yeah,
of
we've
course.
Got time, that's fine.
So I was doing one of the Edinburgh Ghost Walks.
Which one?
That's one when you go into a vault.
Yeah. Is it the South Bridge vaults one?
I think it may be. I'd have to consult my notes. And you end up in a pub. I think it's the Labyrinth pub.
Yeah.
And so we're doing this. And there's a point where you stand in a room and the guide has a torch. And there's like big rocks which have been hewn out and they're like for sitting on. Mm-hmm. And the guy says, this is a place of strange activity, so I'm going to turn the lights out for a minute and just soak up the atmosphere. And so he turns the lights off. And at the corner of my eye, on the ground, I can see this strange white thing. And the more I look, the more it seems to take the form of a washerwoman. Mm-hmm. On her hands and knees, scrubbing the floor. And so I'm just very conscious of this. I keep an open mind, but I'm thinking there has to be a rational explanation for this. And the guy turns the lights on, and it is a big stone on the floor. I thought, oh, excellent, excellent. Thank God for that. Anyway, so we finished the tour, and we're walking out and with my partner. And she turns to the guy at the end and says, oh, have you ever seen anything spooky here yourself? He goes, well, the only thing I have seen is just down that corridor was this ghostly woman and her hands and knees crawling on the floor. I thought, that's a bit of a coincidence.
That is a bit of a coincidence, isn't it? Oh, my God.
So, once again, you know, I don't know if that's a common archetype or, you know, he's in that image, you know, in dark... In a stone mm-hmm. form, and it's just transposed the place.
But you have as well. It's
pretty cool.
Yeah, Edinburgh's a funny place, though.
It is fantastic. Yeah, I've been up a couple of times.
Did you go into the Covenanters prison bit? That's where the Mackenzie Poltergeist.
Yes, we did. This. Yes,
and
we stood there, and then Jim Peralta. the close.
Mary King's Close, that's really good, isn't it? Really interesting place. I'd love to go back.
Yeah, me too at some point. One day.
I see I had a bit of a stalk on the website just to do my research. And I saw that you wrote Haunted Cork.
I did,
which
yes.
Which is, I collect those series of books.
Do you? Because this
every
morning
time I go,
I meant
one.
to pick up a copy and bring it in,
oh.
But I'll drop it in.
Oh,
next time I walk past.
Have you, obviously, and you published an online paranormal diary as well? It's like not a PDF, like a reader version. That looked really good. Do you have any plans to write any books or publish anything? It sounds like you've got, definitely enough.
No, I think I've got enough material. It's just finding time, to be perfectly honest. So the Haunted Cork book was more accident that came about. So at the time, I was writing a fortnightly blog for the Sci-Fi Channel. All about paranormal and weird stuff, because at the time they were running some paranormal programs, mm-hmm. so I wrote complimentary text to go alongside them. And I think one of the publishers, or somebody involved in the publishing side of the Haunted series, saw what I was writing and phoned me out of the blue and said, do you want to write a haunted title and you can take your pick of any county in Ireland?
Yeah.
And I said, I'll give it some thought, but you know, I am working full time. Mm-hmm. I've got lots of other things going on. And then when I got to work, I had the opportunity that I'm bringing in a couple of new people. And so I had the opportunity to take sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, excellent.
I'll
take 2 months off
and
write this book.
Yeah.
And it did take slightly more than 2 months.
Yeah.
But those 2 months gave me enough time to, you know,
Did you go out to Cork? I did, absolutely amazing.
So I interviewed various ghost hunting teams and a couple of people who did local ghost walks, and I did go on a couple of ghost hunts while over there. So one was in this forest, a bit of woodland, which was supposed to be haunted, and once again that's quite creepy because was pretty far removed. It's misty, you know, had these people who are quite hyped about seeing something. And the other place was an old school, which had been disused for about 20 years, mm-hmm. and so completely derelict. Mm-hmm. So we
Did you take your camera to that one?
I did. I took lots of photos, most of which I didn't publish, because it's you could, looking at those photos, mm-hmm. get an idea of where it mm-hmm. was, and it probably wasn't the safest place to be wandering around. But that was really quite eerie, because it had obviously been used by a lot of rough sleepers mm-hmm. Over the years. But some of it was perfectly intact.
Oh, wow.
So the woodwork room still had stuff on the blackboard.
Really?
And all the desks laid out.
That's almost spookier, isn't it?
No, it was. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the dorm area still had all the bathroom mirrors up with various bits of graffiti and messages of support to incoming students, and quite sad as well, and very moving, you know, people pouring their heart out, saying, you know, I found it really hard this year, but I've been told it'll get better, and if you're reading this message, you know, I expect you'll experience the same feelings. Oh. And so don't swim down the creek because so-and-so got Legionnaire's disease while in the water there.
Just, okay. That's a good tip.
So, no, it's an eye-opening experience. Yeah.
They're such a good brand of books, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. They're really, really nice. Like I said, I collect every time I go somewhere new. In fact, I need to get an Ipswich one. I have to go and find a bookshop.
Well, that's Pete Jennings, I think.
Is it? I think I've seen it, because it's on Google Books. You can, like, see it on there by, like, mm-hmm. having the physical copy
collection. I'm the same. Unfortunately, my book collection's a bit too
I think
large.
You should do a paranormal diary, though. That was really interesting. Oh. I really like the idea of it. Because obviously so many hauntings and things are meant to be reoccurring, aren't mm-hmm, they? Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of carrying it around with me. You can do them for each region.
I should do a small pocket version.
Yeah, that would be really good. Now, obviously, you don't just record experiences with ghosts. You cover all sorts of things, folklore, UFOs, ABCs, cryptids. Do you have a favourite 14 subject?
That's a really good question as well. I don't know. I mean, like I say, when I all started off, it was UFOs, and that was my passion. And then I did go on to haunted buildings. I suppose I have a bit of a soft spot for the shark, you know, because he is our local legend, and he does pop up all over the place.
Yeah.
And whenever there's online forum discussion of your favourite cryptid, I always make sure Black Shark.
Would you say Black Shark's a cryptid or a folklore?
Well, this is where
and
defining things or trying to catalogue things is now impossible.
Because I think if somebody saw him now, they would go, oh, it's a cryptid.
And I personally think there's a lot of evidence which suggests, you know, alien big cats and the shark are ultimately the same entity, because you know, there's very little evidence of large black cats, you know, and that kind of evidence could be applied to the shark as well. You know, his claw marks are left in the church down the road. And I think there probably is a correlation.
I definitely think there is for our region. I don't know about other regions, I'm not so familiar with necessarily. Because there's obviously you have Padfoot and things in different areas.
Yeah, Lancashire and Wish Hounds down south.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's a whole other discussion.
Yes,
we were just interviewed in Thetford Forest about Thetford Forest Bigfoot, mm-hmm. which I'm not necessarily sure that there is a Bigfoot in Thetford Forest.
No, I think that's a fair conclusion as well.
But it is fun traipsing around the forest. But there have been these sightings of like more like a beast,
mm-hmm.
which is like almost like a wolf, which then obviously then ties in with Black Shark and the big
absolutely.
Cat. So it is an interesting theory. I haven't got any other questions apart from one, which is the most important question. Which is scarier, a monk-headed dog or a dog-headed monk? Because in Suffolk there is a story of a monk-headed dog.
And
Clopton?
It is.
Yeah. You weren't expecting that one.
I wasn't, and it reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever seen or can remember the 1970s version Invasion of Body Snatchers.
Yes, I have.
And that was terrifying. Two of the pods are damaged, and you end up with this monster with the head of a person, body of a dog, and that for me is much more terrifying than.
That's the right answer, because that is way more terrifying. It's just like, because if it's got a human head, it's obviously, you assume it has a human brain.
Yeah, and intelligence then it can run and really cunning. Fast.
But that's it. So thank you so much, really, for coming along.
No, it's been you're really more good than welcome.
To chat to you. I feel like I've got like fangirling.
No, I'm the embarrassed one.
But yeah, thank you so much. And, yeah, and I guess if anyone has any stories from the UK that they want to share with you,
drop me a line. Check out paranormaldatabase.com, and there's a contact section just on there.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.